Welcome to Forward, a podcast by EasyCare, where we protect what moves you, with your host, Corey Smith. The views and opinions expressed by guests in this podcast may not be those of the host or EasyCare and Abco Holdings Brands.
Welcome to Forward. I'm your host, Corey Smith, National Fix Operations Training Manager with EasyCare. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by a colleague and a friend, Sean Armour. Sean, welcome to Forward.
Corey, thanks so much for having me again. I think this is the third time. Congratulations to you and the whole team on the new direction, the new branding. I'm super excited to be here and to provide value in the best way that I can.
Oh, and you are a three-time award winner on this podcast, and I'm excited to have you here. For those that may not know you, right, give us a high-level overview of who Sean Armour is.
Sean Armour, that's a loaded question. But here we go. Yeah, so 22 years this year in the business. Started off in, I believe, 02, 03, something like that, many moons ago anyway. Washing cars. Like everybody else, this was only supposed to be for a couple of months in the business. And 22 years later, here I am. Kind of made my way up here in Canada. In the early years, I was 17 years under the rooftop. Like I said before, I started off washing cars, kind of worked my way up through the fixed ops department, did pretty much everything you could possibly do from porter, shuttle driver, did appointments, cashier, service manager, service advisor, etc. Later went on to break my teeth on this thing called BDC and built six of those before this thing called COVID happened. Once that happened for the first time in our career, as you know, in the car industry, we rarely get time off, so we're pretty much 60, 70 hours a week when you get to that service manager position. So I decided to branch off on my own and put all these years, package them up, and I wanted to give back to this industry that's given me so much. And I created, I'm the owner and founder of BDC Alchemy Inc. So it's a coaching and consulting for BDCs. And essentially, I assist dealerships in working together to generate revenue generating BDCs. So I've been doing that for pretty much 3 years, and I've been doing pretty well, south of the border, as we call it, here in Canada anyway. I've been doing pretty well, working with some really, really big dealer groups, super excited. I'm going on my seventh or eighth BDC build in a matter of 2.5 years, and everything is going really well. So I'm very blessed and fortunate that you guys have opened the doors to me.
Well, we're very blessed to have you, and this is going to be a little different of a topic for you. This will be titled Leadership in Times of Change, Steering Through the Industry Disruptions, right, Sean? So you're a disruptor in the marketplace, whether you like to admit it or not, you are, right? And we're going to talk about this at a high level. So let's just jump right into the podcast. You ready?
Yep.
Awesome. Navigating change, right? The only constant in life is change, right? In your experience, Sean, what are the most effective strategies for leading a dealership through significant industry disruptions, such as technology advancements, market shifts?
Well, for me, it would definitely be to be adaptive. I find it intrinsic in our industry to not get anchored to a certain set way of doing something. There's many ways to skin a cat, as they say. What I mean by that is, listen, as an industry as a whole, we're governed by month-to-month ecosystems, whereas most other organizations, give or take, are actually governed by quarters, you know, Q1, Q2, what have you. I believe the auto industry, we're in very familiar territory when we're talking about significant change. We're in very familiar territory and have always been navigating through this volatility. So I think at the precipice, process is what comes to mind with regards to any type of volatility.
Okay. I like that. I'm a process person. For those that don't know me, I'll break out in hives if I don't have a process. I have a process on everything. When I mean everything, I mean everything. Yeah. Home life, personal life, professional, everything.
And you nailed it. Sorry, go ahead.
No, finish what you're saying.
Well, you kind of nailed it, because it's not just having a process, but as a super high intense BDC coach / consultant, it's not just necessarily about the process, right? It's about documented processes. And not just documented processes, but once you can clearly articulate the process, you got to create a process flow, because some people are visual and some people are auditory. You know, I work with a lot of dealerships, especially in the field of work that I do as a high performance BDC coach. I get called upon not when something's kind of going wrong, but the roof is on fire. It's either they just lost their BDC manager, or the BDC has kind of lost its way. And it's really, you know, they're on their last leg, so to speak, right? So I don't, unfortunately, I don't have the luxury of time when I'm working with my dealer groups. So it's like, okay, Sean, how much and how fast can you turn this around? I'm like, oh my God, you know? So one of the things that I do first is to understand them and to meet them where they're at. And in order to do that, one of the first questions, and my questions are always strategic. And one of the first questions I always ask them is, what part of your current BDC right now, if I could put it into a BDC perspective, but that question could be applied to any operational department as well. But what is it exactly about the BDC that's going wrong? To this day, I've never, and not to be cynical, but to this day, I've never had a very straightforward answer. They do the best that they can, which is fantastic, which is why I exist. But the number one answer is, well, my BDC is broken. Okay, great. Which part? Right? And oftentimes when they can't answer that, that's where we begin. We need to break this down into touch points and a process and flow, a flow chart, basically, a daily workflow chart.
So if we really look at the, you know, the significant industry disruptors, it's not having a process, right? How about utilizing technology within the market as it does shift? Can you share a specific instance where you successfully navigated such a change?
Yes, 100%. I mean, with my vendors, with my dealer partners all the time. One of the things about what I love about what I do is that I'm actually a partner. I don't consider myself a vendor, because a lot of my agreements, because I don't do contracts, but a lot of my agreements are like 8 months, 9 months, up to a year. I've been with dealer partners for a year and a half. So what happens is I now become a trusted consultant, whereas I work directly with their vendors, right? So I assist them in that vendorship. So most recently, and I won't say their name, but I was working with a very, very well-known vendor that deals with texting. And my partner actually flew me out to NADA to resolve some issues that we were having on their tech stack. There was multiple different tools that they needed a little bit of, my intervention with regards to the level of questioning and expertise that I bring. So in this particular tool or company vendor, we worked together, whereas I was able to clearly articulate the needs that we had outside of what their product actually offered us. I'm like, listen, this and this is great, but we really need this. Let's work together and see how we can make that happen. So I think one of the biggest things when we're talking about navigating through technology is to really understand the technology, not just go out and buy the biggest, brightest thing and putting it on your website and letting this thing run in the background, but to truly understand its efficacy. And how does this tool help us? What are we trying to resolve by putting this tool there? Not just buying something to put it up on a website, or if it's an AI to answer the phone or what have you, but what problem are we trying to solve by having this? So by working closely with your vendors and understanding what their tool does, and also the navigating the change of what's going on out there. What do our customers need? You know, it's not enough just to be a part, you know, to sign up with a vendor to solve a particular problem. Well, you and I know, Corey, that especially in the car world, every 3 to 4 months, this thing is changing. Well, you need to find vendors that could change with you.
Yeah, I love that. So building that relationship, being resilient. So building resiliency, how can dealership leaders foster a culture of resiliency and adaptability among their teams, especially during periods of uncertainty, or as you said it perfectly, the rapid industry evolving.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're asking me, you know, I'm a big proponent, and I'm going to say the word, it's been killed, but I actually coached this. It's not just a terminology. Emotional intelligence, especially when we're talking about cultures and adaptability. Now, I don't use the term EQ softly. What I mean by that is by creating an environment of trust and safety. I've heard this once. This is not mine. I heard this once, but it just really struck a chord with me. You know, when you prohibit failure, you kill innovation. So if we're harboring or if we're creating ecosystems that are based on trust and safety, then we create a space for our people, which will always be the most important thing is our people. We're creating an environment where our people are free to come up to us and express themselves and tell us what they're seeing, as opposed to creating a moat around their day-to-day operations, right? Another big thing when we're talking about resilience, of course, is by being supportive and not to forget to celebrate the little W's. The little W's are really good. Unfortunately, Corey, you and I, when we were younger, we were lied to, whereas we were told that the bucket of gold was only at the end of the rainbow. Remember those stories? But when I really, really do my studying, and when I read a lot on leadership books and emotional intelligence and how to apply that into leadership, because this is learned behavior, right? There's not just somebody that's going to come into the dealership and just start teaching you about emotional intelligence. It's our accountability as leaders. We have to go out and get that information. Now, what happens is, instead of having the mindset, you know, I've always subscribed to the mindset that instead of having a bucket of gold at the end of a rainbow or at the end of some kind of a target or result that won, it's also equally as important to celebrate the W's. So what I think is, instead of having a bucket of gold at the end of the rainbow, those golden nuggets are actually spread throughout the rainbow. So to stop and celebrate those little W's will absolutely harbor an environment of trust and safety in your employees.
Nice. So those are some really best practices that you can put in your dealership right now, whether it's power sports, RV, marine, or auto, right?
100%. People are people, right? And the most interesting thing, there was this amazing book. I forget the author, but it's called 4,000 Weeks. And inside that book, it was really amazing how he broke down, human beings. And when I'm reading this, I'm like, okay, how can I apply this? In this particular instance, I applied it to the onboarding process. Now, I forget his name. I wish I had it for you. But the book is 4,000 Weeks. It's absolutely fantastic. And it deep dives into people and people as your employees. And it's very important to understand that people as a whole, you, me, your employees, the people that we're responsible for, we get input by sensing and intuition. Right? We get input. We all receive input by sensing and intuition. I'll give you an example that I gave in the book. You know, when we used to leave the club like at 3 or 4 in the morning and you're kind of walking down the street and then you're walking towards a car and you're walking down that alley and you're alone. And for whatever reason, we go on that dark alley and we have a choice. Do I take the long way or do I cut through the alley? Has it ever happened to you in any instance that you look down the alley and it's super dark and for whatever reason, you're like, this just doesn't feel right. I'm going to go around. It just doesn't feel safe. Well, that's predominantly what sensing and intuition is. And unfortunately, what happens is it's seldomly is it taught at the leadership level, whereas when we're engaging with our employees, we often think that they're going to actually understand what we're telling them, but perception is reality. So if I'm talking to you and I'm saying, hey, Corey, congratulations, you did great yesterday on that thing, and my arms are crossed, I, as an employee, I'm sensing that you don't mean it. So it's especially important to understand the people and how they think as well.
So that leads me into this question, you know, innovative leadership, right? What role does innovation play in maintaining and growing dealership operation in the face of evolving industry standards and customer expectations?
Dude, it's the biggest, biggest proponent of a company is the innovation. Like I said before, you know, when you prohibit failure, you kill innovation, right? So the thing with innovation is when everything is going great, it's going great. You don't necessarily need innovation because everything's going fantastic. You know, pardon my French, but I am French, but pardon my French, but it's when the shit hits the fan that you're going to need innovative people within your ranks. Now, when we're talking about innovation, or for me anyway, the way that I understood it is that innovation now comes down to the type of people that we're hiring. So I go back again to the critical aspect of onboarding. If in order for an organization, of course, this is my opinion, but in order for an organization to be innovative, typically speaking, what I have seen with successful organizations is that although results are super important, and of course, we all love results, you should be far more concerned with your trajectory than with the result. In that, what I mean is that when you focus on results, it's momentary. As we started off this show, you know, we're in an ecosystem of volatility. We're going to have a good month, we'll have two bad months, then three good months. So if we're always just focused on the result, what is that turnover going to look like? You know, if we're always only hiring for the best people and we have two bad months, but we had a good one before, does it mean that those people were no good just because we had two bad months? So although I do enjoy results, I tend to promote focusing more on trajectory. And when you kind of adapt that certain mindset, or when I have anyway, in the teams, the successful teams that I've built, when, how can I say this? When you need to focus more on the inputs, your people, and the outputs will take care of themselves.
Oh, I like that. Okay. So if we talk about employee engagement and development, right? How do you keep your employees motivated and engaged during times of significant change or challenges within the automotive, RV, power sports, or marine industries?
That's a great question. I personally have an issue with the concept of motivation, because, you know, not everybody can be motivated the same way. I like consistency more. But with regards to that question, how do we keep people motivated? By making them a part of the day-to-day activities. You know, by sharing the vision of the organization, by supporting them, by giving them updates. Is it weekly updates? Is it monthly updates? Where are we going? You know, I believe that in our industry, we can do a lot better. Again, I'm not trying to be cynical, but I think we can do a lot better with regards to keeping our people a little bit more updated with regards to what's the vision, where are we going? And one of the most important things that I have done with regards to motivation and keeping people motivated, if we're gonna call it motivation, is to manage the data and coach the people. Ooh, I'm going to say that again. Manage the data and coach the people. Whereas right now, what I've been seeing for the last 15 years, and I've been a part of it for 17, which is why I went off and started my own thing, is that oftentimes what we do, because we are cyclical, because we're month to month, we manage the data, and then we're using that data, especially on the sales floor, to say, hey, listen, if you don't pull up your numbers, unfortunately, you got to go. Right? So by managing the data and actually coaching the people on a successful trajectory or career path, we're going to be far more successful as an industry as a whole. And in order to, at the end of the day, it's very simple. In order to create a guest experience, we first need to create an employee experience.
Ooh, I like that. Let's highlight that on the show, right? That episode right there. Bang. So what strategies, and if you keep your coach's hat on for a second, what strategies do you employ to ensure continuous learning and skill development among the dealership staff?
If the people underneath the rooftop are not confident enough in their abilities to effectively coach and train their team, they should go out and seek experts in that field, such as yourself. The amazing work that you're doing with service advisors. No, I'm being serious. And as well as what I'm doing in the BDC world. And I'm not saying that they don't have time to do it, but the ones that don't have time to do it, it's not a cost. It's an investment, right? It only becomes a cost when your investment, you don't get an ROI. So definitely training and coaching your people, not to get anchored in a specific way of doing something. And one of the methodologies that I use with regards to that specific question, if ever working with a store, is I use the three I's. So this was taught to me. This is not mine. I didn't invent it, but this was taught to me. And the three I's are, you're going to identify, investigate, and isolate. So when you identify a problem, whatever the problem is, then we're going to go and investigate that problem. And then within that investigation, we isolate it. Because within the investigation, there could be three elements that are causing the problem. Okay, well, let's isolate each three. Maybe it's all three combined. Maybe it's only two of the three that's a problem. But it's very important to have that approach. It's worked wonders for me.
Okay, I like that. So if we shift a second for, you know, towards the customer-centric approaches, right? With the landscape of automotive and related industries changing rapidly, like we'd all agree with that, how do you work with the dealers to align with the dealer's strategies to stay customer-centric?
Love that. Communication, communication, communication. And not just communication, but I also, in my consulting and what I do, I don't just build BDCs, because BDCs, how can I even say this? BDC isn't the goal. It's the tool to get you to the goal. Mm-hmm. It's very important, because a lot of people think that when I come in, I'm going to build a BDC and this thing's just going to run on its own and it's going to fix everything. Of course not. The BDC is a tool like any other department under the rooftop. So the first thing that you want to do, the first element that I want to do when I'm building BDCs, outside of the processes and scripting and what have you, is to build communication bridges with the departments that they serve. The core purpose of a BDC is to provide a consistent flow of traffic to the sales and to the service department, right? The BDC initiatives from the onset need to be in alignment with the department that they serve. And in order for that to happen is communication. What is it exactly that the service manager needs to be successful? He's going to give us his list. Okay, I need this, I need this, I need this, whatever these elements may be. We sit down, we talk about it, and we work the problem backwards. Okay, how can the BDC contribute to the success of the service? Well, that daily communication, which is why I go back to what I said before, trajectory over results. Results is a byproduct of how well your processes are. Because my mentor always told me, listen, Sean, focus on trajectory. Why? Because when you're managing your data on a daily basis, a weekly basis, and a monthly basis. Well, what happens is when you adopt that kind of approach, you can have a bad day, but you won't have a bad week.
Yeah, and I think I love where you're going with this because, and I think you said it earlier in the episode, is that we've got to meet the dealer where they're at, right? The dealers have to meet the customer where they're at.
Correct.
Can't we get back to some basics of what we used to do that we love? Like, I talked about this ad nauseum yesterday, that when I go and check my mail, I want to say 80% of it is junk mail. The other 10%, I don't even want, but I have to pay the bill, right? I never get anything like, oh, I can't wait to open this, right? Wouldn't it be great for a dealership as a service advisor, a salesperson, F&I person, as a team, right, to have a handwritten note, thank you for coming in and servicing at our facility, or buying a new vehicle at our facility, or buying a new RV, or working on letting us work on your RV. Thank you. And it's signed by the team, right? Wouldn't that wow a customer?
Well, it would definitely wow a customer. But then again, and to challenge you a little bit, and I listen, I absolutely agree with you. Handwritten notes, 100%. However, don't forget, our customers right now, I don't have all the stats on this, right? But our customers are changing. Mm. We've gone into a digital world.
Oh, 100%.
Whereas 7 seconds, I may send you a letter or a nice card and you may just rip it up and throw it out because it's not fast enough. I want fast, fast, fast. But to your point, meeting the customers where they're at. One of the biggest things that I would recommend for service, and I said this just the other day, I started doing this actually with one of my newest partners I just onboarded. When you say go back to the basics, one of the most basic things that I was doing when I first started 16 years ago, I used to actually like hand out the Coke cans and stuff. Definitely at services, once a month, at you know whatever the cadence is, pull off all the customers that bought a new car last month and have an information night. Invite them into the dealership. Set up chairs and tables inside of your service bay, your drive-through, whatever it is that you have access to, your waiting room, and let's educate our customers there. Do they know that we have genuine parts? Do they even know, you know, outside of service and tires, but do they know that we actually have everything? Do they know that we can wash and wax their vehicles? Do they know that we have roof racks for when vacation comes in June and July? Do they know that we have night drop boxes and that we could drop off the car at 2 a.m.? Do they know that we have certified factory technicians? Why is our door rate more expensive than the person down the street? Well, there's a reason for that. And I think one of the things we can do a lot better on, to be honest with you, is to educate our customers as to why things are the way they are. If you build value, have you, Corey, let me ask you, you're a DJ, right?
Yes.
All right, let me ask you a question. Have you ever bought a mixer or a CDJ that was slightly outside of your budget?
Oh, yes.
Okay, why did you buy something that was outside of your budget?
Because there was a gadget that I had to have and I rationalized myself that I needed it because it was valuable to me.
That's the key word I was waiting for. When we build value around a certain need, price is irrelevant.
Mm. Amen.
Now, obviously, I'm not saying sell the farm and to gouge our customers. Of course not. But I'm telling you right now, between being $20 more expensive for an oil change between here and Pennzoil or what have you, we need to stop thinking that our customers see the business through our lens. And that's one of the biggest mistakes I think that we make, especially in marketing initiatives. Again, I'm not shitting on the marketing team. They do excellent work. However, there's so many times when we're getting ready to just do that e-blast of the promotion for this month and all this stuff, and we're using all this industry jargon, they don't understand what we're saying. They don't even understand what we're saying, right? So I think one of the first things we need to do when you say meet the customer where they're at, we just need to look at this through a different lens. Let's get back to basics. Let's have an info night. And let's actually start educating our customers. Why are we $20 more expensive? It's the same oil. But they think in their minds that we're trying to gouge them. Oh, I'm not going to the dealership. Immediately, why? I'm not going to the dealership. They're too expensive.
Right.
Immediately, they're going to say that. That's the adage. Oh, I'm not going to the dealership unless I have warranty work because they're way too expensive. Well, have we ever, you know, one of the biggest combustion points we still have to this day, this has been going on for 40, 50 years, is the handoff from sales to service.
Mm.
And again, those two departments need to talk a little bit more. I'm not sure who's going to get that done. However, I don't cry over spilt milk. If we know that that's a combustion point, as a service guy, there's nothing stopping me as a BDC from going and asking the sales manager or the sales secretary or whoever to give me a list of everybody they sold a vehicle to last month, and I am going to get them in for an information night over at service, and I will take back accountability and control for my service department. And then we walk them through our service. We walk them through the value. I mean, if you go to Pennzoil, I'm sorry, there is no night drop box.
Nope.
Well,
won't call you when it's done either.
And they won't call you when it's done, right? So we could go off for another hour on all of the benefits, but it's those benefits, like we said before, to come back to that word, we need to build value with our customers. And that's what's going back to basics means. Back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, when your dad was buying a car, he always went to the same guy. Why? Relationships.
Relationships. And I've said this on the show many a times, but we don't have an ESPN for the car dealership or the RV store that shows our highlights on what we do well. It's the employee's job to build that value, right?
Correct. Yep.
So Sean, we're right up against the time, and our time is always precious, and I wish it was longer. But we're into the lightning round of the episode. Give me your three takeaways from this episode in your mind that a service advisor, an agent, someone at the leadership of the dealership can really take away from this episode.
First things first, perception is reality. Let's stop thinking that our customers see the business through our lens. They don't. That's number one. Number two, where you currently find yourself, whether you're in BDC or whether you're a service advisor, where you currently find yourself is the opportunity. The dealership doesn't owe you anything. We've given you a job, we gave you a computer, we gave you a desk, we gave you clients, we gave you real estate, we gave you a phone. Step up, level up. What are you going to do about it? You don't need to have the title of a leader to be one. Mm. And then the third one, growth is found in the opportunities currently being mismanaged. As an employee, it is your, if you want, depends on your work ethic, which is how I got to being on this show, right? I held myself accountable. I held myself accountable and I avoided becoming complacent. How can I do better? I would ask for my numbers, however you're governing and however you're measuring, whatever the report system is. I would go up to my bosses and ask for my performance metrics before they would give them to me, because I am accountable for my own career. So be accountable.
All right. How can people get in touch with you, Sean?
Easiest ways through LinkedIn, of course. I live and breathe on LinkedIn. The other one's through my website, bdcalchemy.com, or you can always send me an email at thebdcalchemist@gmail.com.
Love it. EasyCare is a total performance provider working alongside your team to help achieve your goals in F&I and across the dealership. We are an award-winning provider and administrator of F&I products and can provide the tools, knowledge, and training needed to unlock this potential of your dealership. For more information on EasyCare or to be a guest on Forward, feel free to send me an email at csmith@apcoholdings.com. Sean, that is all the time that we have for today. Thank you for being a part of this episode. And I'll ask this last question like I ask every guest. Will you please come back?
For a fourth time, absolutely. Thanks for having me, Corey. I really appreciate it. This was fun.
Thank you for listening to Forward, a podcast brought to you by EasyCare with Corey Smith. Be sure to like and subscribe to the podcast. New episodes are released on the 5th and 20th of every month.